Part 3, Monsters and Martyrs. Chapter 15. He had only wanted to buy a little more time, but as he crouched next to the receiver beneath the bent girders of a toppled viaduct, Omegon was delighted with a static broken message passed on by the cryptoduct. The poor quality of the signal was due to a communications block being broadcast from the Ravenspire. It was the response Omegon had been depending on, though it meant his own transmissions would be severely hampered. The message was from Contact 3, who knew nothing of his fellow Alpha Legionnaire's action. Omegon played the recording again, his fingers adjusting the dials of the receiver to get the best possible signal. The report was still quiet and fragmentary, and only his experience and superhuman hearing allowed him to pick out words and phrases from amongst the white noise that was blanketing every frequency. Wide-scale degradation throughout the latest batch. Degenerate. Bestial. More recent recruits are worst affected. Korax has ordered nearly 1,000 of the poor... Suspect's mutation due to some mistake in the gene replication of a large-scale implantation. Apothecary 6 housing the... Howls and roars like caged animals. Security has been tightened around the gene tech, but access still possible. There seems... Overall mission integrity intact. Awaiting... The sacrifice of Eloquii's guild had been worthwhile after all. In the grand scheme, their survival or success was irrelevant. The guild insurrection and the Order of the Dragon who had instigated it were simply the means to pry open Ravendelve. The Beta would be moving into position, while the Order of the Dragon was ready to strike their final blow. It was time that his operatives knew their full part in the endgame. He shut down the receiver and packed it away, going over the final parts of the plan in his mind. Tomorrow, 29 Terran hours from now, the Alpha Legion would make their move. The pain had subsided for the last few hours, leaving Navarre with a deep ache in his flesh and bones. He sat in the corner of the cell, not able to look at Marles, Carvo, Dauteran, Benna, and the other 20 raptors who shared the room. They were amongst the fortunate ones, apparently, though Navarre did not feel fortunate as he looked down at the jet-black talons jutting from his fingers. He had seen a few of the worst affected, as Six and his attendants had hurried them into the quarantine area that had been quickly established in the depths of Ravendelve. It was only temporary, the apothecary had said, reversible if they could isolate the mutated strands in the gene seed. Navarre knew he had not experienced much of life, but he recognised a comforting lie when he heard one, even if Six had been lying to himself as much as the raptors. He could hear the muffled yells and screams of the most degenerate and could not push away the visions he had seen. Some of them had been bent almost double by elongated spines. Others had been twisted by insane muscle growth, their limbs warped and engorged. Bony growths split their skin. Fangs punctured their lips. And all had the same bloody eyes as Navarre. As a child, Navarre had never suffered nightmares. Growing up in the shadow of the Ravenspire was more assurance than any mother's words that there were no monsters that could harm him. Yet the sight of the degenerated raptors was something from the darkest recesses of his imagination, causing a primal revulsion and fear that no amount of Legiones Astartes discipline and training could eradicate. That he was counted amongst the monstrosities only increased his unease. His brain, his body, no longer produced the fear response of a normal human, but on that primitive level, in the core of his mind, Navarre was distressed and unable to articulate his worry. It was as if he could not form the thoughts, could not grasp the concepts required to voice his dread. Navarre stood up to ease the pressure on his lower back, where one of Six's attendants had surgically removed a vestigial tail. The raptor's knees and hips ached, wound about with tight, overgrown ligaments and sinew. He started to walk, completing a circuit of the room, which was bare, save for the thin training pads on the floor that had been provided as rudimentary bedding, the best the Legion could offer for the moment. He neared the door and heard voices. The door was not locked, not for them. Elsewhere, the most bestial sufferers had been taken to the cages that had once housed Six and Orlandrius's animal subjects. They could not be trusted to stay where they would be safe, though none had been violent towards their fellow Raven Guard. The voices grew louder, and Navarre recognized the deep timbre of the Primarch. He gestured to the others, and they rose from their positions to crowd as close as they could get. The conversation seemed to be taking place a little further down the corridor beyond, near to the infirmary entrance.
"It is an intrinsic problem with the gene template. I am sure of it,"
they heard Orlandrias replying to something said by Korax.
"There is no error in the replication process."
"Then why are the first 500 raptors unaffected?" said Korax. "At some stage we have made a mistake. The reduplication to this scale must be responsible."
"Unless there has been degeneration in the source material," replied Six.
"It is kept in stasis. How could it change?"
countered Orlandrias.
"Incrementally," replied Korax. "It is removed from stasis for reprocessing new batches of gene seed. Perhaps it has degraded a little during each removal, so slightly that we have not noticed it."
"That would suggest there was an inherent flaw," said Six.
He cleared his throat before continuing, apparently uncomfortable with what he had to say.
"The flaw is not in the Raven Guard gene seed. It has been verified many times over since its creation."
"What are you suggesting?" said Korax.
"That there is something wrong with the Primarch data," said Orlandrias,
as coolly as if he were discussing inclement weather. "Or our analysis of it," Six added quickly. "The traits we are seeing, the deformations, are consistent in their own way, not entirely random."
"I fail to see that," said Orlandrias.
"I do not," said Korax. "We know that there are elements of non-human structures within the Primarch data. Similar strands are encoded into every gene seed. The Legiones Astartes makeup owes a small part to characteristics found in other species, introduced by the Emperor into the gene seed. The scales, horns, and other growths may be indicative of these traits being accelerated, out of step with the rest of the adaptation. Whatever was holding them in check, maintaining the balance, has deteriorated. Judging by the timing of the change, I would start by looking at those physical functions under greater stimulation during combat. It seems that something in their enhanced metabolism triggered this."
"An uncomfortable thought," said Six, "to think that all of us contain the potential for such transformation."
"Not all of us," said Korax.
"Apologies, Lord, I did not..."
"I don't mean my Primarch heritage," Korax continued. "The standard Raven Guard gene seed is stable, as you said before. We have done something to destabilize it, isolate that cause, and perhaps we might find a means to reverse the errant genetic material."
"It is a possibility," said Orlandrias. "I shall conduct more tests to compare the initial raptors created with the most recent, to see if I can identify a consistent differential."
"I'll concentrate on making them as comfortable as possible," said Six. "If we can't..."
"We will," said Korax. "They are Raven Guard and deserve our greatest effort. Keep me informed. I must return to Ravenspire to discuss the attack on Ravendelve with the Command Council."
"You fear it is the start of something more threatening, Lord?" asked Six.
"We all but wiped out the insurgents, so the threat is debatable. That prescribed Giltec weapons have surfaced cannot be ignored, though. We could do without further distraction while we resolve the issues with the gene template."
The noise of the conversation receded, followed by the clank of the infirmary door closing. Navarre turned back to the others.
"You heard, Lord Korax," he said. "They'll find a way to change us back."
Some of the other raptors smiled. A few sadly shook their heads. Navarre headed back to his corner and sat down, ignoring the pain in his rump. The Primarch believed that there was a way, and he had the most brilliant mind imaginable. Feeling a little happier, Navarre leant back against the wall, closed his eyes, and tried to sleep. The discussion between the commanders and Korax had lasted for several hours. Bran was happy to leave the command chamber, the last of the council to do so, having been intensely questioned by Korax regarding the insurgent attack, and he was anxious to return to Ravendelve and oversee its defence. The Primarch had been adamant that the timetable for the attack on Narsis was not changed. If the raptors could not be included in the force, the Raven Guard would adjust their strategy. Bran definitely wanted as many legionaries as possible to take on the perfect fortress, and so his place was at Ravendelve, to provide an encouraging presence for Six and Orlandrias. As he stalked towards the conveyor down to Alpha Dock, he was met by Controller Ephrania. She held a data tablet in her hand, a sight that Bran did not find encouraging.
"A moment of your time, please, Commander," said Ephrania.
"Walk with me,"
Bran replied, continuing past.
"We have found several odd signals, Commander," she said.
Bran stopped.
"Commander Agapito's channel?"
he asked quietly.
"No, Commander, not this time," said Ephrania.
She handed Bran the data slate.
"There have been several encrypted messages concealed within normal Legion traffic. Hidden amongst the data pulse between Ravenspire and Ravendelve, riding the pulses to bypass the communications block. They appear to originate from several places on Kiavar."
"So, we found out how the Guilders are communicating. Good work. Can we stop it?"
"I already have, Commander," said Ephrania, looking a little hurt by the implication. "One such transmission that was hijacked was a routine upload from the infirmary core in Ravendelve. In picking apart the entwined codes, it became apparent that the core log had been tampered with. The log was accessed and then the access was crudely wiped."
"There are only a handful of us with access to that log," said Bran. "Why would any of us try to hide such action?"
"Digital markers indicate that it was Commander Agapito," Ephrania said, her voice hushed.
She stepped closer to Bran, though he could hear her lowered voice with ease.
"I was about to tell Lord Korax, but as you are here, I think that perhaps you should deal with the matter."
"Thank you, Controller," said Bran. "I'll handle this."
Bran turned around and headed back towards the central transporter that ran the full height of Ravenspire. Whatever reason Agapito had for accessing the GeneTech data logs, it would not excuse an attempt to conceal the act. The commander quietly fumed as he made his way up to the personal chambers of his brother. He did not knock, but threw open the door, ready to demand an explanation from Agapito. The chambers were empty and showed no sign that Agapito had returned here after the command council. Bran activated his vox.
"Spire Command, can you locate Commander Agapito?"
"One moment, Commander."
Bran waited impatiently, pacing around Agapito's main room. He spied a tablet on the arm of a couch and picked it up. Activating the slate, he brought up the last screen display. It seemed to be a duplicate of the files Bran had been given by Ephrania no more than 10 minutes before. His communicator chimed.
"Commander Agapito authorized a pilot and Stormbird for launch, Commander,"
the Legion functionary in the command chamber told him.
"Course logged was for Ravendelve."
"When?"
demanded Bran.
2.5 hours ago, Terran standard, Commander."
Bran cut the link and threw both data slates to the floor.
"What are you doing, brother?"
he asked the empty room.
2 hours was enough time for Agapito to already be at Ravendelve.
Bran ran from the room, heading for the Thunderhawk, waiting for him at Alpha Dock. The scanner ticked monotonously, every pulse accompanied by an image on the screen in front of Alpharius. He turned his chair and checked the audio pickups, seeing nothing detected except for the wind. The gun towers had been constantly manned since the last attack, and Alpharius and the rest of the squad had been on watch since dawn. Nothing was happening. There had been no sign of any insurgent activity in the last 20 hours. The chair creaked as he leant back, laying his hands in his lap. Behind him in the control room, Sergeant Dorr was cleaning his bolter, cloth and tools laid out on an instrumentation panel. Marco was also there, monitoring the communications station.
"Time for another visual sweep," said Dorr, not looking up from his work.
Alpharius said nothing as he stood up and moved to the reinforced door. He keyed in the security code, and the door extended out and slid to one side. Stepping into the airlock, he sealed the door behind him. He took his helmet from his belt and fitted it before opening the outer seal. Wind rushed in, bringing the acrid taint of pollution. Stepping out onto the rampart, Alpharius glanced down at Ravendelve. Searchlights from the towers and walls scoured the surrounding ground, their beams lost in the hazy air no more than 100 meters out. He could see armored figures patrolling the walls beneath him, their eye lenses bright yellow dots in the gloom. Unslinging his bolter, he walked around the rampart, passing under the shadow of the huge twin-barreled cannon in the emplacement atop the tower. He performed a point check, using the magnification of his auto-senses to inspect the gatehouse, armorium doors, and other points of entry. All he saw were Raven Guard patrolling tirelessly or standing sentry. 1,000 Talons had been sent down from Ravenspire to reinforce the garrison, taking the place of the raptors who had succumbed to the genetic corruption. It had pained Alpharius to see the tainted legionaries, some of them racked with agony, all of them a perversion of the Legiones Astartes. It would be a mercy to kill them, and when the time came, the Alpha Legion would surely grant them swift release from their torment. The Raven Guard were enemies, but Alpharius had a great deal of respect for the warriors of deliverance, having shared in their tribulations. He continued on his circuit, moving to the outside of the tower to look out over the rad wastes. He already knew from the sensor reports that there was nothing out there, but the Raven Guard were highly suspicious of Guild Tech and left nothing to chance. It was possible that the insurgents possessed something that might mask them from the scanner sweeps. There was nothing to see, only a tortured landscape of flattened buildings and cratered rock. He started towards the door to complete one loop around the tower, but stopped at the corner to look into the far distance. To the northeast, 5 kilometres away, the outskirts of Nabrik jutted from the bank of red fog, like the fingers of a drowning man breaking the surface of the water. Lights blinked from their rooftops, and the lamps of armoured airships passed sedately between them. Alpharius was about to turn away when he noticed a flickering in the gloom close to the base of one of the towers. A series of flashes illuminated the fog. Moments later, a dirigible erupted into flames. The mangled remains of its gondola sent plummeting into the city. A second or two later, the Alpha Legionnaire heard the muffled but distinct rap of heavy cannons drifting over Ravendelve, followed by the crack of the airship's detonation. Astounded, he watched tracer fire erupting from several of the cloud scrapers at the heart of the city, and more explosions billowed into life further into Nabrik. He thought it to be just another insurgent attack at first, targeting the Mechanicum following recent defeats against the Raven Guard, but then several things happened at once. 2 huge detonations rocked one of the soaring towers, almost cutting it in half. The upper stories crumbled and toppled, crashing into the streets below in a huge cloud of flame and smoke. Alpharius's first thought was that it was a bomb, but his amazement grew as a gigantic figure appeared silhouetted against the growing column of fire. It was at least 90 meters tall, its right arm a massive multi-barreled cannon. The left, another immense weapon that gleamed with the blue sheen of plasma generators. Its armoured carapace was packed with turrets that streaked laser and shell fire into the city. An Imperator-class Titan. As he watched the Imperator unleash a ball of ravening blue energy from its plasma annihilator, Alpharius heard Marco shouting over the vox.
Full alert! Man stations! Threat imminent!
Powering up defence cannons, announced Dorr.
The words had barely sunk in when the macro cannon above Alpharius opened fire. The shockwave from its twin muzzles hit the Alpha Legionnaire, his suit-warning icons flashing amber and red as the concussive blast enveloped him. 2 shells the size of battle tanks screamed into the distance, exploding kilometres away. Just as the noise of the shell detonations reached Alpharius, a ticking started in his skull, a double pulse different from the one he had felt before. He knew immediately what it meant. Omegon had remotely activated the tracking function. The implant was now homing in on the devices of the other Alpha Legionnaires. It started, Alpharius thought, his hearts racing. The Alpha Legion were making their move. He had to get into position and meet with the others. Increasing the magnification of his sight, Alpharius saw 4 columns of vehicles and infantry snaking through the ruins where the cannon had fired, passing between flames and rising smoke from the double impact. There were transports and tanks, flanked by 3 armoured walkers, each 20 meters tall. One of the warhounds, the walkers were clearly scout-class titans, was enveloped by a shimmering dome of purple and black as its void shields collapsed from the initial macro-cannon bombardment. The other 2 warhounds raised their weapons and returned fire as shots from turret 2 shrieked across Ravendelve to pound into the metal body of the compromised titan. Alpharius hurled himself to the rockcrete a moment before the cannonade erupted around him, showering him with stone-like shards and fragments of the plasteel reinforcing rods within the tower wall. Two white beams lanced out of the shifting fog, punching through the armoured casement of the macro cannon. Propelling himself towards the door, Alpharius was engulfed by a storm of sparks and fiery debris from above, spitting and clattering on his armour. He hauled open the outer door and threw himself inside, slamming the armoured portal as another volley of shells hammered into the rampart where he had only been 2 seconds before.
"Nord and Falco are down," Sergeant Dor reported. "Cannon is non-operational. Withdrawing to central structure, there's nothing we can do from here."
The tower shuddered again from more impacts as the airlock cycled through the filtering process. Alpharius paced back and forth for a few seconds, waiting for the inner door to open. The interior of the tower had been plunged into darkness, lit only by sparks bursting from fractured consoles. Dor and Marco were waiting by the stairwell that linked the tower levels.
"What about the others?" asked Alpharius, glancing up to the landing above.
Automatic fire suppression systems had flooded the gun casement, filling it with white, dusty smoke.
"Done for. Let's get moving," said Dor, setting off down the steps. "Muster at Station 4.
Alpharius could not afford to be drawn into the general muster. His instructions from his Primarch were to get to the main gate.
"Go on,"
said Alpharius, waving Marco to follow Dor. The Raven Guard turned his back on Alpharius as the Alpha Legionnaire unsheathed his combat knife. Alpharius drove his boot into the back of Marco's knee, forcing him down even as he plunged the blade towards the side of the legionary's neck. He sawed the serrated edge through Marco's flesh, almost decapitating him.
"Watch the delay!"
Dor shouted back up from the landing below. Alpharius dropped Marco's corpse to the floor, readied a grenade from his belt, and moved to the rail above the steps.
"Take this!"
he called out, dropping the primed grenade. Dor caught it out of instinct. A slow second passed as he realized what he'd done, the grenade falling from his fingers, but too late. The grenade exploded, hurling the sergeant from his feet, razor-edged shrapnel cracking against his armor. Alpharius knew that a single grenade would not be enough to take down a legionary, and vaulted over the rail, bolter in one hand. He thudded onto the landing as Dor was pushing himself to one knee, chainsword already drawn. Gas hissed from split piping, and oily fiber bundle lubricant mixed with the blood leaking from the sergeant's midsection. Alpharius's first bolt hit Dor in the left side of his helm, where the communication pickup was located, silencing any warning he might broadcast. Dor roared and leapt at Alpharius, who dodged back a moment before the spinning teeth of the chainsword would have taken off his arm. He fired blind, hammering bolts into the sergeant's chest, the cascade of detonation sending Dor sprawling again. Alpharius followed up quickly, placing his next shot through the eye lens of Dor's crumpled helmet. The already damaged helm split apart as a bolt detonated inside, spraying blood and brain matter across the metal floor. Stopping only to prize the chain sword from Dor's dead grip, Alpharius headed down the tower. Looking up at the colossal form of the Magnus Casey as the Imperator Titan unleashed another miniature star into the heart of the city, Omegon felt a little trepidation. He had known that the Order of the Dragon had extensive resources, but had not appreciated just how much influence they had extended into the Mechanicum of Kiavar. He had expected a distraction, infighting amongst the different temples. What the Order of the Dragon had delivered was all-out civil war. The streets were packed with tech priests and Mechanicum functionaries fleeing the carnage. Slack-faced servitors wandered around, unable to process what was happening, staring vacantly at the explosions and flames. Here and there, soldiers in reflective bodysuits herded the crowd away from the fighting, urging them out of their line of fire with their rifles. Praetorian servitors, half-human war machines even larger than Omegon, watched over the exodus with chain guns, las cannons, and sonic disruptors. Guild forces were pouring into the city, thousands of warriors clad in armoured environment suits. The distant crackle of las fire and thunder of heavier weapons cut through the sound of flames and the panicked shouts of the surging throng. Here and there, the fabric of the streets themselves exploded from below as indiscriminate mole-mortar fire raked the city from the outskirts. Screaming and shouting erupted with renewed fervour as the Magnus Casey lifted its foot and stepped along the broad boulevard between two smoking hab-blocks. Defence turrets atop its buttressed and crenellated carapace barked into life as the vapour trails of aircraft cut through the sky above the city. Amongst the surge of fleeing civilians, Omegon had perfect cover. He stepped from the door of a forge house and into the crowd, head wrapped in a thick scarf, heavy robes concealing his immense frame. He had discarded his armour, sinking it into a chem pool in the wastes. It was stealth and not physical defences that would protect him now. Allowing himself to be pulled along by the stream of people, he flowed with them to where the boulevard broke into a large plaza. There the crowd began to fill the square, and their panic grew. Squads of the Mechanicum soldiers, the Scitarii, were blocking off the exits, forcing back the refugees with electro-staves and warning shots from their autoguns. Tracked weapons platforms were positioned at the intersections, their cyber-augmented crews alert for danger. It was simple enough for Omegon to use his bulk to force a path through the throng, heading for one of the other roads leading into the plaza. Shouldering aside a tech priest, he strode to the Scitarii cordon. He was met by a company leader, the plates of his carapace armour engraved with Mechanicum runes. The officer looked up at Omegon with mechanical eyes, lenses reflecting the flames consuming the cloud scraper behind the Primarch.
"Captain Wirtz of the Talons, let me through," snapped Omegon,
not allowing the officer a chance to speak.
"I must report to Ravendelve."
"Yes, sir,"
said the officer, waving his men to drag aside part of the barricade they had erected across the street.
"There is a column from the 6th District assembling at Foundry Arc, responding to a request from your Primarch. You might want to join with them."
"Thank you for the information," said Omegon,
stepping past the Scitarii leader. He was genuinely grateful for the knowledge, as it would mean the next phase of his plan would be made a lot easier. He broke into a run, heading out of the city towards the edges of the rat wastes. The crash of falling masonry announced the destruction of another turret. Ravendelve's main building shook with the impact as the lights flickered and warning sirens screeched. Agapito had no time to wonder about the significance of this development as he pounded down a flight of stairs towards the Armorium. He was met at the next landing by a squad of raptors who were assembling a multi-laser on its tripod. For the last few days he had spent much of his time with Captain Norris, taking his advice on the basic defensive strategies his legion employed. Agapito's mind was brimful of attrition ratios, specific kill zones, and interlocking deployment patterns.
"That's no good there," he snapped. "If the enemy get this far in, it'll make no difference. Move it to the south transept for a decent field of fire."
"Yes, Commander,"
replied the squad sergeant, even as Agapito continued on his hurried course. "Besides," he thought, "I still need an escape route open to me, if things get out of hand." As Agapito entered the Armorium level, he found the area almost deserted. A few servitors trundled back and forth, hauling ammunition onto the bed of a bulk carrier. They paid him no heed as he ran past. Hearing voices ahead, the commander sidestepped into one of the practice ranges. Footsteps rang on the floor outside, and then passed away. When the sound of the legionaries had faded, Agapito emerged into the main corridor, checking that he was not seen. If his presence was remarked upon, he would surely be called upon to take charge in Bran's absence, a delay he could not afford. He did not know how long he would have, but every second wasted might see his opportunity lost. Alpharius entered the gatehouse with a confident stride to find an assortment of Raven Guard already there. Most were Talons, but a squad of raptors manned the controls of the lascannon batteries overlooking the approach. There were certainly too many legionaries for him to overcome in the same way he had disposed of Dor and Marco. There was a commotion at the other end as Sergeant Nestil entered, flanked by two warriors from his squad.
"Activate landing beacons," the sergeant ordered. "Reinforcements are arriving. Be ready to open the subgate to let them in."
Checking a snarl of frustration, Alpharius moved away from the massive doors of the main gate. His task had been to secure the gates and open them for the arrival of more Alpha Legion troops. But with even more Raven Guard arriving, it seemed like a foolhardy move. The implant in his skull was ticking madly, telling him that another Alpha Legionnaire was close at hand, probably within the bastion of the gatehouse. He could not risk arousing suspicion by revealing himself just yet. Under Nestle's instruction, the lock bars on a smaller gateway set inside the huge slabs of adamantium-sheathed ferrocrete were disengaged. The postern opened on hydraulic rams, revealing a view of the landing apron between the gatehouse and outer wall. The gatehouse was soon going to be very full, so Alpharius headed up the stairwell leading to the observation gallery that ran above the gates themselves. He found himself in the company of five other Raven Guard, sitting in the cradles of the quad-heavy bolters mounted along the gallery's outer wall. Ignoring them, Alpharius looked out of the metre-thick glass-steel window. The flare of ramjets descended through the ruddy murk, and he recognized the shape of an approaching Thunderhawk, another 100 meters behind. Touching down on the apron, the black-armored dropship lowered its ramps to disgorge several squads of legionaries moving at the double. As soon as the last Raven Guard disembarked, the Thunderhawk pilot gunned the engines and took off. The second touched down as the first wave of reinforcements filed towards the open postern gate. At a loss, Alpharius glared down at the two lines of black-armored figures jogging towards the gatehouse. He watched the second Thunderhawk lift off again as the first wheeled around a few 100 meters from the wall. Something struck him as odd about the Thunderhawk's maneuver, and he paid closer attention to the gunship's approach. Increasing the magnification of his auto-senses, he zoomed in on the gunship and saw that the locking arms on its missiles had been disengaged. It was about to make an attack run. He sprinted back towards the stairwell. Four near-simultaneous blasts filled the gallery with flying shrapnel and fire, the shockwave hurling Alpharius through the doorway to send him clattering down the first flight of stairs. Head ringing, he pushed himself to his feet as he heard the report of bolters from below. The vox was suddenly alive with shouted warnings before being cut off by deafening static. Two Raven Guard backed into the stairwell beneath, one blazing with his bolter, the other sending a stream of burning promethium from his flamer at some unseen enemy in the main gatehouse. Alpharius leveled his bolter and opened fire, cutting down the legionary with a flamer. His companion turned in surprise, weapon lifting towards Alpharius. Before he could fire, a ball of plasma screamed through the doorway, exploding against his left side, incinerating half of his body in an instant. Holding his bolter in one hand to pull free his looted chainsword, Alpharius advanced slowly down the steps, eyes fixed on the doorway. He stopped as he reached ground level, hearing the sounds of fighting lessening. Bolter held out, he stepped around the edge of the arch. The ticking in his head was near constant now. He saw Sergeant Nestil striding through a pool of burning promethium, almost on top of Alpharius, flames licking from his breastplate and left arm. Alpharius readied the chainsword and sprang at the sergeant, sweeping the weapon towards his throat. Nestil saw the attack and pivoted, catching the side of the chainsword with his forearm to deflect the blow onto his shoulder plate. Monomolecular teeth screeched, churning through paint and ceramite.
Hydra!
Nestil yelled, bringing up his combi bolter.
Efrit!
Alpharius replied instantly, the counter-signal. He stopped mid-swing, letting the chainsword drop to his side. Nestil also lowered his weapon.
Nestil?
Said Alpharius, not quite able to believe that the veteran sergeant was really an Alpha Legionnaire.
I am Alpharius, the sergeant replied. Ort?
I am Alpharius.
So am I, said a voice behind the pair. What a coincidence.
Both Alpha Legionnaires turned.
You,
said Nestle, shaking his head.
One of us is a commander?